Spooky. Oh, it's Joe Fish from Matamidi. This is Joe Fish from Matamidi, the following podcast may contain offensive language, descriptions of violence, and the occasional use of the N-word.
Has been done. Now is all that ever is. So celebrate this precious gift. With each breath, I become one is all. All is one. We return to where we're from. Nothing new under the sun.
Welcome to Sticks and Stones. And let me introduce Autumn Dilly. She's a revolutionary, a mom, sneaker freak, protector, lover of breakfast food, and she's from the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa and Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and is street outreach extraordinaire. Welcome to the show, Autumn.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. That makes me sound so cool.
So, I met Autumn through our shared work of helping people in the community, and Autumn, when do you think we first met?
I would say probably when I started with AICDC, which was about 3 years ago now.
Right, right. And so a little bit about Jason and I, we've known each other for about 30 years. And Jason is one of my comrades in the struggle to liberate the people and cause as much mayhem as possible, even though we're over 50.
You're just living. Just living.
So, did you just say you're over 50?
Yeah, we both are.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're old.
You mean you couldn't hear Dave's knees when he's walking around?
You know what?
You know, I don't have, like, any kind of impairments, really.
Oh, yeah, he sits in that chair all day. I forgot.
That's lethal. Terrible. Can you tell us a little bit about your work, Autumn?
Yeah, so I do street outreach. I mean, I've done street outreach for young people, Native American young people first. That's kind of how it started. And then I moved over to AICDC, where I specifically work with Native Americans that have substance use disorders, mm-hmm. that are experiencing homelessness. So a lot of our work looks like going into camps, different places where people congregate or live unsheltered. We have a couple of different housing options that are like different tiers of housing. So folks, like, if they still use, they're still, you know, they still deserve a home. They still have all their rights, even if they use drugs or alcohol. We have a shelter. We have a bigger outreach team than, you know, what we started with. It used to be just me and Travis, and now our outreach team has doubled and will continue to grow, I guess. But yeah, I mean, that's really the idea. I mean, the goal is to end homelessness, but we haven't really gotten that far yet, I guess.
That's a big goal right there.
Well, the mayor said he was going to do it in 5 years, and I don't think that's happened.
Hasn't he been around for 5 years?
Yeah, I think his coming up, his re-election's coming up.
For those who don't know, can you tell them what AIC it means?
AICDC is American Indian Community Development Corporation. We are a corporation that sits on Franklin Avenue. We own multiple different buildings. We also have a real estate side to our corporation.
Nice.
Our CEO is a realtor, and our CFO is the broker. So we try to help Native American families buy homes and get into home ownership.
That's good.
So there's a bunch of different things that AICDC does.
Yeah, I've seen like AOIC and over the years and all those different. Like,
well, that's because Indians love acronyms, and we like have so many. So like, there's those are all different. Those right. are all different organizations. So yeah. like AOIC is the school, like career training, and that was started. Don't quote me on this. It was started
a long
in, like,
time ago.
60s. Like with AIM. AIM is the one that founded that career center.
Hey, I got an off topic question, kind of. Not off topic, but I was wondering what you thought about the word Chippewa compared to Ojibwe. Oh.
Well, I don't have. It's the same. It's the same thing, basically. So, whether it's like Chippewa, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, like it's that's how Turtle Mountain recognizes their people, which is the same as Ojibwe. So I don't really have too many feelings around that.
When I grew up, because I'm Ojibwe, my family's from White Earth, like my mom's family. Mm-hmm. So when I was younger, it was Chippewa. When I got older, it became Ojibwe or Anishinaabe, because I heard Chippewa was a word that someone else used to reference us.
Yeah, and that's kind of the truth of it. So, and then Ojibwe Mon is our language.
Right.
And so it kind of switched over to that too. So I don't know. It's like someone saying, do you prefer being called Indian or indigenous? So like American Indian is what's written in our treaties. And like now they have like the word indigenous has become like super sexy. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants to use the word indigenous about everything, like indigenous this, but like we're all indigenous to somewhere. So, like, in a way, it's, like, another form of erasure. We're not, like, truly identified. We're just saying, this person's indigenous.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel the same. The only thing I don't like about, American Indian is because it's, like, it goes to that whole, like, African American, Asian American, but you never hear white European or American European. You know, so I'm always like,
You mean they're not called American white people?
Yeah.
Hey, American white guy.
They're just like, they're the Americans, you know?
Right.
I'm American.
Right.
I mean, that context, too, of color is just to be referred to, like when you're talking about whether you like to be called Chippewa or Ojibwe. And for me, if I were to hear somebody go, hey, you know that color boy versus right. or that black boy or that Negro boy, like it's, you know, now it's like all kinds of different. And to me, it's just black is black to me. But I don't want to be, first off, let me just say, don't fucking call me colored. I ain't fucking playing, so I'm gonna be front with that shit right now.
If a white dude came up, man, and said, hey Negro,
hey, I heard you. There's a colored fountain. There just used to be a colored fountain. Did you know? And I would snap. Or anybody said, hey, you're colored. I don't want to hear all that. I get it though. I do get it, but then I don't get like how we as a society hang on certain contexts, the construct of race, especially when a lot of us just don't, you know, we don't have a voice in the first place. So for me, it looks like, man, I know who I am, but this is how I fit into this, because this is what they name me. If that makes sense. I don't know if it does or not, but it just feels like that. Because I carry that, and I don't. It's interesting to hear you and Jay talk about this, because this is something he's never talked about with me.
Well, I think for me, it's just like I don't call Lakota people Sioux because that's the same thing. It's kind of like if That would be like if someone came up to the Baldies back in the day and pointed at the white power dudes. We'd be like, those dudes are boneheads.
Right.
And then so from now on, everybody called them boneheads.
Right.
Which is kind of true, but at the same time, that's not what they call themselves.
Right.
You know, or whatever, so.
Well, there's the lower, Sioux community, and they call themselves Sioux. A lot of them take pride in calling themselves Sioux.
I know, but doesn't it mean like...
But that's like them calling themselves that, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. Right.
I don't call my Lakota brothers and sisters, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're Sioux.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I do when I'm throwing shade at them directly.
There is that.
Yeah, we used to clown, you know, with this coworker I had, and we'd go back and forth, and she would call us chips.
Mm.
Not, like, in the mean way, just, like, mm-hmm. just plain, you know, because tribes, you know, the Dakota and Anishinaabe, man, they used to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, but that's the difference between talking to somebody who is non-native versus talking to someone who is native. So, like, if I'm talking to another native person and I say I'm from Turtle Mountain, I don't usually say Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. Like, it's just Turtle Mountain, and then they're like, oh, yeah, all
right. Right.
You're Plains Indian. I know where you're from. Yeah. Or if somebody's like, I'm from Prairie Island, I'm like, all right, I know where that's at.
Right.
Like, we don't have to fill in the blanks of, like, what people we come from because we already know.
Word.
Or there's either, for me, it's like I don't even say anything. I just say, what's up, really? Because I just feel like they're native.
Yeah.
You could tell.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So it's just like, well, what's up,
dude? Usually we are always trying to look for a connection. So, like, talking to another, like, that's kind of one of the things on outreach, too, is, like, breaking the ice and talking to somebody about, you know, where are you from?
Oh, yeah.
Who's your family? Like, who's your grandma? And, like, those are the conversations that we have naturally anyways anytime we first meet a member native.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it happens on outreach so organically that we're able to make that connection right away.
You know what? I drive a garbage truck, and when I'm in South Minneapolis over off, like, Cedar or High Lake Outlet, I always come across so many needles, man. And it's just so heartbreaking to me. Like, I see that crap, and it's just like, damn. You know, it has such a grip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I know you guys must come across just the people who are doing it. You know, I don't see I see it not as much as you guys probably interact with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk a little bit about that. Work, if you could, Autumn, and how it looks, you know, moving through that community.
I mean, I think the first time that I presented this problem to city council, I mean, everybody had already been presenting this to city council, but it was like maybe 2.5 years ago where me and my supervisor, my outreach partner, Travis, we were working, and I was like, you know what, let's see how many needles we pick up in just one shift. And within one shift of like 3 hours, we picked up over like 60, 70 needles.
Mm.
And we lost count after 60 or 70. I put all those needles in a mason jar, like a gallon mason jar, and I brought those to my testimony at a city hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there and I told them, I was like, you know what, like, every situation that Indian people have been put in, we have adapted to,
mm-hmm.
whether that be reservations, any time you have moved us and made us live somewhere else outside of where we normally come from, we've adapted to it.
Right.
And now we've adapted to this epidemic of heroin, of fentanyl.
Right.
We've adapted to it. We know our kids are 8 years old and they know not to pick up a needle. They know what those needles are for. They know, like, my son probably could tell you how to pick up a needle because I've been doing outreach for so long.
Right.
And it's like, we've adapted to this, but at what point are we going to say, like, this isn't good enough? Like, you're not fulfilling our needs as a community by giving us, like, adequate resources, treatment centers. I mean, we've known now
uh-huh.
that heroin, you don't just do a 30-day treatment and you're over it.
Right.
Like, this is a lifelong process, getting over heroin, getting off of heroin, and staying off of heroin. So maintaining your sobriety. And 30 days doesn't cut it.
Right.
And so it's like almost like treatment is like a privileged thing to get, to obtain.
Right.
Because like, I called treatment for somebody who had private insurance, and they're like, yeah, it's just $15,000 to get through the door. And it's just like, are we going to be able to beat this if we can't even get treated for it? When I went to city council, it was because I saw this 10-year-old girl put her like four or five-year-old brother, sister, or brother on her back and walk him through the grass. And when I asked her why she did that, she was like, because he doesn't have shoes on, he has sandals on, and I don't want him to step on a needle. And it's like, our kids are paying attention. Our kids, they know. At Little Earth, they train children how to administer Narcan, because we're the first responders. The cops don't get there until after it happens.
Right.
You know, the first responders don't get there until after it happens. So who's going to save mom? Who's going to find mom? It's probably going to be the kid. And so, I mean, like, it's heavy and that's dark, but that's the reality. And so we've had this conversation so many times within our opioid response meeting. It's just like, when are they going to start to do better for us?
Never.
They constantly ask us, like, what should they do? Where are we going to move? Like, when I say them asking us, it's like local and state government. They always ask us how to help us. But they don't come with the resources. It's just, you know, maybe you can help them, you know, get into your place, instead of like, hey, let's look at a bigger picture. I think Avivo is the first time that we've had like a specific place where people can use inside and live super low barrier. Like our housing, you can come in intoxicated or high, or, you know, with your needles, and we were able to put those aside for you. But, you know, we're making headway. You know, we're coming up with housing options for folks that are out here. But the real question is, you know, when are we going to have adequate treatment for this?
So let me ask you, too.
Because it's killing us, and it's killing us fast.
Right. And I agree, too, wholeheartedly with everything you said. And I should say we do, because it is like the plague, and it's hard to describe to people. Really, it is really hard to describe what it looks like doing street outreach, and then the trauma that's displaced in that work, you know, throughout that work. It is incredible. And so how do you like charge yourself up to go to work, and then how do you, when you get home, or you get with your, or wherever you're going at the end of the day, how do you practice self-care? So talk about what it takes for you to get going to work, and then what it takes to care for yourself when you're outside of it.
So it's funny that we're talking about this. So like, when I'm out in the field or out of my apartment in general, like, I'm a very extrovert person. But then when I'm home, and there's been hours where I don't even say a word. Because I'm burned out. One of the things that I can say is that I'm a survivor. And because I'm a survivor, I've learned how to deal with crisis in a very, like, structured manner. So, like, I know I'll kick in and I'm ready to go. I know what to do. I know where to get you. All of these things. Like, I know how to de-escalate. You know, the most escalated person. And I'm knock on wood that I don't have to do that. But when I'm out there, it's that trauma that kicks in, my own trauma that kicks in, that helps me get somebody to go where they need to go. And then I forget to shut it off when I get home. And there's been many, many years that I've forgot to shut it off when I get home. Mm. And like sometimes I sit in my car for 20 to 30 minutes before I walk in the house, smudging myself off and making sure I change my clothes the minute that I get in the house has been one of the things that I've recently been doing. Mm-hmm. Just so I can change, I can switch from work mode to mom mode. Mm-hmm. Therapy, talk therapy has helped a lot, because a lot of things that I have to keep my clients like confidentiality, their privacy. So like, I don't get to talk about them ever, you know, I don't get to get their stories out and get them off of me.
Right.
So talk therapy has been, really good for me. And that had to be somebody outside of the community because I can't, I don't want to see somebody that I do wraparound services with for my clients. And then, you know, I just unplugging. I go home to Turtle Mountain pretty often. Mm-hmm. That's an 8-hour drive, and literally I just cruise.
Wow.
Trying to recharge myself with people who love me mm-hmm. is probably the number one thing that I do.
Right on. I mean, you don't got to go 8 hours to be loved, though. You got people here that love you. In Minneapolis,
yeah, for
I know
sure.
for sure.
But that 8-hour drive is nice.
I bet.
Because it's just quiet the whole time. I don't bring my kid.
Oh, you don't? See, I'm thinking he's in the back like, mom, 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 mom.
Mm-mm. He goes to dad's house and I'm out. Like, I will make that drive on a Friday mm-hmm. after I drop him off at his dad's house and then turn right back around on Sunday and come home.
Nice.
That's a good trip.
No music, no nothing, just quiet.
Sometimes there's music, but sometimes I'll just sit in silence for a while and drink my coffee and smoke a cigarette.
You know, the silence piece is from the it's funny that you mentioned that. The reason why I brought that up because often I do that when I'm at home after a rough day. Like last summer was just, it was tough, you know? And being quiet has been a way that when I got home from doing street outreach was a way for me to recharge, you know? And it's funny that I never really asked any other outreach workers if they did that. But you know how, like, if you're talking all day, it's super hard to talk after work, man. It is. It's hard to explain to anyone else. I guess if you did that for a living, like some place where you had to really engage people all the time, and then when you got home, you probably wouldn't be like, yeah, let me tell you about my day, and then I did this, and then it's just you. It doesn't come out like that for me.
You could just be like, turn on the podcast and listen.
Nice softball.
What'd you do today? Listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast. That's not all I did, but but that's funny though. That's funny. But I can't.
Yeah, me and our two other outreach workers, two female outreach workers, we went out and got our nails and toes done last week.
Nice.
Or the week before, I can't remember. But we came in as like a squad to get our manis and pedis. Mm. And the people that were doing our nails are like, how come you guys came together? We're like, yeah. And they're like, how come you're so quiet? Like, you guys aren't talking to each other. Usually when people come in here together, like, they come here to, like, visit, mm-hmm. hang out, you know, gossip, and you guys haven't said a word. It was right after work, and I didn't realize that neither of us had said a word to each other.
Wow. Wow.
Quiet time.
Tell us about how does your son deal with you being quiet when you get home? I mean, does he say, I know we talked a little bit about that in text, but how does he deal with it? Is he like, all right, I'm gonna let you have that space because I know now, and then I'll be back.
Yeah, I think over time he's really adapted to my job and to mm-hmm. my work. So like he just the vocabulary that he uses when he speaks. Mm-hmm. Is like the doctor asked him like, what does mom do for a living? And he was like, my mother serves the unsheltered population. Mm. And she was like, excuse me? And he was like, she helps people get housing. And the doctor was like, oh, all right. Like, that's, you know, that's language an 8-year-old doesn't use. But he knows how, mm-hmm. he sees like homeless people sleeping on benches, or he sees somebody signing, or I'll run into somebody while I'm with him. Mm-hmm. And so he gets a glimpse of what I do. And then when I get home, usually I'm like, all right, mom's going to cook dinner. This is where I'm at. Like, can you play for like 45 minutes?
Right.
And then he'll just go. So he's an only kid. He's an only child. He's got everything in his room.
Nice.
Everything to entertain him. He's good.
Does he got some Air Force Ones?
No, he's a Vans. He's a Vans person.
Oh, he doesn't have your sneaker.
Mom's like, he's a Vans person.
You're like, no, he's going to get them Vans, and I get these dope-ass Air Force Ones.
He's going to get flat feet, like, and him. I'm going to have comfortable feet.
No, he had Air Forces, or not Air Forces, Air Maxes.
Oh.
And okay. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. Them babies were scuffed out. He's a kid.
Dang.
Yeah. That's how kids should be.
He has a pair of Vans, and he's already ran those into the dirt.
Does he skate?
No. He doesn't do anything risky.
Mm-hmm. He's a safe kid.
Right. So if there's a risk involved, chances are he's not going to do it.
Why is that, you think?
I don't know. I think he's a critical thinker. And I think he thinks about how things are going to pan out.
Mm-hmm.
But like riding a bike, I've got him on a bike like maybe 4 times. And he's like, yeah, no, can get hurt. Not going to do this.
The brain. He's the brain.
Right. I've tried to get him to like swear, mm-hmm. or do like naughty things. He won't do those either.
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
It's coming.
Puberty starts kicking in.
I hope not. I hope he stays good.
So you talked a little bit about the mayor, you know, and the work. The work in the city, in Minneapolis in particular, right? How has, well, your work in the community, and then you see Native women and some of the and a lot of the alarm around missing Native women and sisters and daughters. How have you really participated in any of that to the point of both talking about it or spreading awareness about it, or is that something that intersects with your street outreach work?
I think it does intersect with street outreach work just because we see, you're talking about MMIW, right?
Yep. Yeah, just, yep. Mm-hmm.
Missing Murdered Indigenous Women.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny because the sheriff thought he put me onto that the other day. It was so funny.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
He was like, have you seen this documentary in Canada where all these women go missing?
Yeah, right? Like, did you know that there was gangs and they shot each other?
I was like, that's very cute. That's cute. Thank you. It's wild you bring that up because there was just a woman who they identified her remains. And she was a young lady from Turtle Mountain. I don't know if you saw that today in the news.
Nah, you know, I have been not watching the news, but I should do that before we talk on this podcast, but I'll do that next time.
Where'd they find her?
It does intersect because I didn't read the whole thing. I read just a portion of it. It was pretty gnarly. Her body was found in a plastic storage tub.
Oh.
And then they finally identified her body. But this was from 2005.
Oh, man.
That they found her body. So this is like just now a case being solved.
one out of the thousands.
But it's
like,
what?
I said one out of the thousands.
Yeah, man. You know how fast they find white kids when they go missing?
Man.
Like, with an Amber Alert, they find white kids by the end of the day.
You know? Like, for real, that's like, real talk. That is real talk.
The funny thing I find about... The funny thing I noticed about people from Canada, they're always kind of like, on social media anyways, they're always like, America's crazy. Or they'll have like memes that are like, we're ready if you want to come up here, blah, 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 and act like it's so great. But Canada towards Native people is just as bad or even worse than America in some aspects because they do Native people dirty.
Yeah, hold on.
I'm watching the news. He's watching the news?
He's sick in his bedroom, and I went to go hand him some Gatorade because I could hear him coughing. Yeah, I have family in Canada, actually. My grandmother's side of my family is from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're hella racist. Because I think from what I know, on their reserves, they don't have to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that that pisses white people off.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have to either here. You don't have to pay state taxes, I mean.
Right.
If you live on the res.
Oh, I was like, I pay hella taxes.
Right?
I was like, what discount am I not getting?
Like that's good compensation. Hey, the reservations are like third world countries. Hey, you don't have to pay taxes.
Right, dude. I mean, that's always there. That's always any bigot argument, too. Like, you don't pay taxes, you get free medical care. I'm like, yeah, human rights, motherfucker. Like, you're mad over us having like a little bit up on you?
Hey Autumn, do you ever get the well, you're Native, how much casino money do you get?
All the time.
Yep.
I was working at a treatment center, which I'll leave the name out. And
Hazel's? No.
This girl, it was like she was my supervisor, and she was like, so like, because I was talking, one of my coworkers was like, oh, my grandpa was calling me fat. And I was like, it wasn't your Indian grandpa, was it? And she was like, no, it wasn't my white grandpa. How'd you know that? I'm like, because Indians don't tease other people, Indians about being fat. They tease you if you're too skinny. And my supervisor was like, well, why is that? And I'm like, I don't know, probably because we live in poverty. And we eat, like, super processed food because that's all that's given to us. And she was like, but don't you guys, like, get casino money?
Wow.
I was like, is that for real? Is that for real how you guys think? That we're just all out here balling?
Right? Jason, why did you got a fucking Benz, bro?
Right.
The problem is that I see is, like, half of the dudes buy nice cars and they want to be like hip hop artists, and then they live in a dirty old double wide. You know, it's like, dude, you invest your money, do something with it. Stop trying to be like,
right?
You know.
Well, I ain't got that problem, bro. I mean, that's. I guess I gotta wait till I get my money to tell you what it's like.
And that's only some of it. I mean, that's just a small, you know, it's that whole idea of, like, you can take someone out of the res, but you can't take the res out of them.
Yeah, like you can take someone out the hood, but you can't take the hood out the person. Same difference,
so
right?
People are still trapped in their minds.
Right.
You know,
it's teaching, right?
I couldn't even tell you what would be the first thing that I would buy if I was... You know, getting $42,000 a month.
If you're getting that Pequot money.
Dang.
Maybe I wouldn't have to buy my shoes on layaway anymore.
Would you just go get every color, or would you just be like, every week you just be like, man, you know what? I'm just gonna get a pair of shoes every week, and then I'm a.
I don't know. I probably have like a Hummer H3.
Dang.
Tackiest car.
Right. One for your shoes.
Gas guzzler. Earth protector.
Then you can get out and do outreach. Change your shoes. Put on your work shoes.
Cover your shoes up with those little like plastic things so they don't get dirty.
Yeah, those doctor scrubs.
Yeah.
Full hazmat suits.
Can I help you guys? Hey, Autumn, I got a funny story for you. I don't think Dave knows this one. So one time back in the 80s, we were in this neighborhood. 18th and Park used to be a really bad crack neighborhood.
It kind of still is, bro.
A little bit, not as much.
Right.
But it was really bad. We were all getting out of the car because a friend of ours lived down there. And this elder Native woman was like, she looked at me and she's like, You got some change? I was like, I was a teenager. I was broke. I was like, no. And she got all insulted and, you're an apple. And I was like, what? She's like, you're an apple. Oh, what are you talking about? Red on the outside, white on the inside. I was dying.
I've never heard that before.
Dude, that shit was
That's
funny.
A good one.
That shit was funny.
Somebody was saying something about white people saying that about Indians. I'm like, nah, I ain't never heard a white person call another Indian person an apple. That was an Indian person.
Right. Yeah, because I ain't heard
like,
it
the
since.
Only people that be revoking Indian cards are Indian people.
Right. I don't think anybody would do
Your
that.
Your
res
card is revoked. Thanks. Thank you.
I know some folks we can revoke them black cards. I got a list. I got a fucking running list. Tim Scott.
They just call people out.
Yeah, buddy. Tim Scott, you need to hang it up, bruh.
The thing that kind of me and Dave were talking about this, about the murdered missing Indigenous women, is like, it's insane how many women and girls are just disappearing. And so then I beg the question, like, well, how many women just in general? You know, because it's always people of color.
Right.
And you're like, well, now you got to look at European women because there's a lot of them.
Right.
So where are all these women going?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. So I don't even know if I touched on that. With outreach, like, there's new women on the block every day, and especially once the summer hits. And you'll usually see their pimp driving by, like, close by, and there's always a new pimp, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like these girls, whether they're coming from different reservations and they're coming here to Minneapolis to be sold, that's a big one, especially young ones. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how much work is actually going into finding any of these women.
Right.
Which is the saddest part. So it's like that when they finally do get on the ground to try to find these women, are they already dead? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like they just poof and vanish into thin air.
Or they don't even want to
like,
be.
Is that really true, or is it just the cops not doing their job? Which we all know cops love to not do their job.
Well, they're too busy shooting black kids.
Or maybe some of them are in on it.
Right? I mean, you got to believe that at some point. Like, how does it get to this point without them being involved?
Hey,
or the dope trade, or
I'll
anything.
I'll tell you guys something I have heard.
What's that?
And it hasn't been proven, but it's kind of a semi-known fact that that building that Chauvin and Floyd worked at was a known sex trade, like, bar, whatever you want to call it. And so it's just like this weird, like, well, that's odd. the thing I found odd about it is because that building was one of the first buildings to burn down.
And it did get burned down.
Yeah, it burned down to the basement. And that building been there for decades. And the lady who supposedly owned it or ran it just sold it like 3 months before that.
Interesting. What about that? Wasn't it a Midori Sushi World or something? Was that the same building? Or was that across the street?
No, that place had like one of those,
it was the corner building, right? That had that weird parking lot.
Yeah, it was right, you know where that Town Talk Diner is?
Yeah,
that building. Above there, yeah.
Yes, yep. People lived above that too, man. There's a lot of apartments up in there.
Well, I heard on the street there was some shady shit going down there.
Wouldn't surprise me.
With girls being trafficking, sex trafficking and stuff.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, I was just wondering if the Town Talk Diner, that whole building burned down?
Yeah, that whole block.
Yep, that whole corner there.
That's weird.
I already forgot what was there.
You know, isn't that something?
It was like one of those Mexican polka type clubs.
Polka?
Well, you know what I mean?
No, nigga.
Yeah,
The Rodeo Club. Because motherfucking Mexicans don't listen to polka.
Yeah, they do. That music is polka, dude. Look it up. I am not kidding you.
Wait a minute. So you saying they're Polish?
There's a connection. I looked it up
before. I'm just teasing you, man. I know you're looking at me
you can't hear polka in there?
Not really.
Listen to
When I hear that music, the last thing I think of is white people who can't dance.
Trust me, dude. Anyways. Yeah.
When I hear that music, I just think of Mexicans getting down.
Yeah, I don't think it like stiff ass.
It doesn't sound like polka music to you?
Sauerkraut. And
listen to it, dude. Trust me.
Spilt beer and shit.
Ludafisk.
Yeah.
Maybe they got along.
What'd you say?
So maybe they got along.
Oh, the Mexicans and the polka people?
Yeah.
That's another show right there. That's another show. Autumn.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. We really appreciate you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Sticks and Stones on KFAI, Minneapolis. And thanks to our producer, Miss Hill.